nutrition's not an opinion, it's a science. So I think it's just important that we look at the source where those opinions are coming from.
Try searching for pet nutrition and you will be bombarded with feeding advice from everybody with an opinion. A lot of this advice is based on nothing more than hearsay and fallacy. Who do you listen to?
My name's Jessica. I'm a nutrition RVN on Instagram and Twitter. I blog about all things nutrition, basically for pet parents or professionals to get a little bit more information on the animal nutrition world. My qualifications, I'm a Cert 4 veterinary nurse from Australia. My other qualifications prior to becoming a vet nurse, I took a Bachelor of Animal and Veterinary Bioscience, from which I studied animal nutrition across 4 years.
You are listening to The Vet Podcast, presented by veterinarian Dr. Brian Greger from New Zealand. Join us as we discuss pet health issues from around the world.
I guess we should start right at the start here, Jess, and this may be a little bit overly simplified, but what do cats and dogs actually need in their diet?
So cats are carnivores, they're obligate carnivores. Dogs are omnivores, similar to humans. So cats obviously need some form of meat in their diet. That doesn't mean they need meat in exclusion of everything else. So as long as they have a meat protein in there, that's perfectly fine for them. As for dogs are omnivores, so they need some variety in their diet. So they need obviously meat and plant material. They don't obviously need one or the other, but the inclusion of both provides a balanced diet. Now, when we are looking at balanced diets, we usually look for something called AFCO. So there's an AFCO statement on when you buy a commercial diet, that is. They outlay minimum and maximum nutrient requirements for cats, dogs, most animals, and their life stages as well. So with that, that's where you get those nutrient requirements that they need. So with dogs, they're a little bit different to cats. They can synthesize a lot of amino acids that cats can't. Cats obviously can't synthesize taurine for themselves. So that's the main deviation between the two diets.
So without laboring the point then, Jess, what a cat requires is different than what a dog requires is different than what you or I require. So just because we think it might be nice to eat something doesn't mean that it's going to be good for your pet.
Yeah, exactly.
There's quite a trend for people to be feeding raw diets or homemade diets. Can one of these diets be properly balanced?
So it can be. With raw diets, there's a couple of ways that people tend to balance them or try to balance them. So you've got one which is they'll rotate the diet. So they'll try and introduce different things into the diet to keep it balanced over time, as it's a balanced over time approach. That approach tends to have nutritional gaps. So that's where I think they're trying to apply obviously a human diet to an animal diet, in that we obviously eat a lot of things and vary our diet so we get nutritional balance over time, but that doesn't necessarily work for dogs and cats who they need those nutrient requirements every single day, because if they don't, you are going to get gaps that align and then you're going to get deficiencies or excesses. So that's one way that raw diets are attempting to be balanced. The other way is rations. So sometimes you see like an 80-20-10-10, which is basically just 80% meat, 10% bone, that sort of thing. Again, those have been studied and they're not necessarily balanced, even though they may appear balanced. If you want something that is definitely a raw diet that is balanced, the best thing to go for is a commercial raw diet or a freeze-dried raw diet where they have actually been formulated to meet AFCO standards. So that way you know that it is actually going to be balanced.
This term AFCO's already popped up a couple of times in our discussions, Jess. What's AFCO?
Yeah, so AFCO, they're the American Feed Control Officials. So essentially they lay out specific requirements for each life stage of a pet. So you'll often see like an AFCO statement on the bag which says this is complete and balanced, formulated to AFCO standards for an adult dog or adult maintenance dog, which basically just means this food has been formulated to meet the minimums and maximums of like protein, fat, any amino acids that they require, all of those sort of things. So it's basically just to ensure that there's definitely not going to be anything in there that's going to be harmful or a deficiency or an excess. It's just keeping it within those guidelines.
So this AFCO accreditation is something that you should actually be keeping an eye open for on your can or packet of cat or dog food?
Absolutely, yeah. So in Australia, obviously, I'm not sure if it's the same in New Zealand. Obviously, we're not regulated here. So that's why the American standards is what we follow. In the UK and in Europe, they follow FEDIF, which is the federal people. So they actually are in Europe. So they outlay for UK and Europe. So depending on where you are, you'll go for either FEDIF or AFCO.
I think we all tend to have these little sayings that we roll out from time to time in answer to a question. And to be thinking about it, this is probably a little bit glib. But one of the things that I say not infrequently when somebody will come in complaining that their cat won't eat the new diet that they've given it is that a cat likes to eat what it ate yesterday. How important then is consistency in the diet of an animal?
Yeah, look, it is actually quite important. So obviously, apart from the fact that it needs everything that they eat needs to be complete and balanced every single day, it's also eating the same diet every single day is actually beneficial. So the way it's beneficial is basically any change or any new diet can actually upset the balance of the microbiome in the gut, so that good and bad bacteria. So when you introduce a new diet, that's why we recommend doing it slowly, because if you introduce it quickly or you change diets every day, the microbiome can't keep up. So then you get imbalance there, and that's why you tend to get diarrhea, which then the pet then associates this food makes them sick. So then you get food aversions, which is why, like you said, they may not eat the new food or they may not be interested. So that consistency every day keeps the microbiome consistent, which keeps them healthy.
One of the claims that you see on pet food sometimes is that this is a natural diet. Is that a thing?
Yeah, I think this is something that's been sort of, I suppose, extrapolated from human world. I think they sort of say, you know, natural, thinking natural is better. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's better or similar to their previous diet. I suppose we have to remember that dogs and cats are not wild animals. They're domesticated animals now. So their diet is not going to be the same as their natural diet, which may or may not be raw or a prey diet or something that is similar to what they would have eaten in the wild. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be better for them or more natural. It just means it's something that potentially is not actually relevant to them today. If they're a domesticated animal, their diet has changed over time, over a long period of time with domestication. So they're actually more, I suppose, evolved to suit the current diets that we have. Particularly dogs, they've actually had a recent study came out and said there was 120 genes that are different from a wild dog to a domesticated dog. And majority of those genes are around starch digestion. So they're actually better at digesting like a kibble diet or a commercial diet that contains carbs.
Actually, kibble is something that we probably should spend a little bit more time looking at here, if that's okay, Jess. One of the things that it seems to me is that when you read the posts and the blogs and the information put out by the raw food and the natural food people, kibble almost appears to be the devil reincarnate, and it is incriminated in a lot of health issues, twisted stomachs and goodness knows what else. What's going on here?
Yeah, look, I'm not quite sure why it's gotten such a bad name, because I want to remind everyone that there's a spectrum of kibble. There's not just one kibble and it's all bad. There's a big spectrum. So you have obviously your premium, your super premium, your prescription foods, which are kind of at the top of the spectrum. And then way down at the bottom of the spectrum, you've got, you know, your supermarket foods. And then there's a whole range in between. So to say all kibble is bad is really a gross generalization, because obviously, everything is going to be manufactured differently. Everything's going to have a different nutrient profile. So I think it is, unfortunately, a gross generalization that's been put out there. And I think the other thing is, too, is that there's a lot of people that are kind of not professionals that want to have a say, that probably shouldn't have a say, that have more so opinions that they're bringing to the nutrition world. And nutrition's not an opinion, it's a science. So I think it's just important that we look at the source where those opinions are coming from.
When you go and buy your pet food, particularly if you're using one of the premium brands, you have got life stage diets, you've got diets for West Highland Whites, you've got diets for Labradors, you've got diets for Persian cats. How important is it that you match your pet with what's written on the packet?
Yeah, I think the most important is to remember, obviously, every pet's an individual. So not every food is obviously going to be suitable for every pet, but particularly these life stage or life specific diets or breed specific diets, they do have benefits, but I don't think you have to kind of be forced into, you know, obviously I have a German Shepherd, I have to feed German Shepherd. You can feed other foods. I tend to sort of go for, you could try that. If you do have a breed diet and you do have that breed, it's probably going to be beneficial because they are formulated for particular issues that that breed may encounter. The other thing is too, is that if that doesn't work for you, you can also go with size-based diets. So, you know, like large breed or small breed or, you know, even medium breed, there are diets for that as well, which I think are probably more relevant, particularly if you can't find a breed-based diet. And that's more so because obviously they're all going to grow at a different stage and they're all going to have different requirements based on their size. So I think that if anything, would be the first thing I'd look at. Second thing I'd look at would be, okay, well, that maybe didn't work for my pet. Maybe let's try the breed diet. If that didn't work, you can obviously then go for just something that's just standard life stage, like adult or growth or puppy.
You mentioned earlier about feeding bones to dogs. As a clinician, certainly, I am aware of the problems that bones can cause. If I've got a dog which has got an intestinal obstruction, probably the first thing that I'm thinking of is a bone. Where do bones fit in the bigger picture with the diet of a dog?
Yeah, so similar to you, obviously being a vet nurse, we do see a lot of issues with bones. The biggest one, like you said, intestinal obstructions, and the other one being dental fractures. We actually have had quite a few probably over the last year in dogs that have just crunched on a bone and they've broken their carnassial tooth. So I think again, people don't know how to feed bones. So if you want to feed bones, you really think it's a great idea, the most important thing to remember is A, always get a bone bigger than their head. B, always get like a big chunky like thigh bone or like ball socket joint and just let them chew like the meaty part off and then take it away from them. Because it's when they chew on that long hard bone that they break teeth or like you said, break pieces off and then they get obstructions. And obviously never cooked bones because they splinter. Again, there's really no desperate need to give pets bones. If they're being fed a commercial diet, they've probably got bone meal in it, so they're getting all the calcium and phosphorus that they need. So again, it's something if you want to give your dog a treat, that's fine, but just make sure you're always supervising them and you follow those golden rules.
You've mentioned calcium and phosphorus there, Jess. There's a plethora of vitamins and minerals available over the counter to put into your pets. Is there any advantage in giving vitamins and or minerals into the diet of your animal?
Yeah, so the only time I would ever recommend supplementation is if there's a deficiency or if they're actually being fed like a homemade diet. So if they're being fed a commercially purchased diet, it will be complete and balanced, and adding vitamins is just going to cause problems. It's going to interfere with the diet and it's going to block the absorption of certain nutrients or it's going to create excesses. So you're going to have other problems later. If the pet has obviously had a blood test and they've diagnosed a deficiency by their vet, then absolutely the vet is going to give you something to, you know, improve that deficiency. Otherwise, there's really no need to add vitamins. You really just need, if there is a gap, then you can fill it. As you mentioned before with calcium, the biggest thing with homemade diets is they're usually deficient in calcium. That's kind of the number one thing that we tend to see. So I always recommend that if they are going to do a homemade diet, that they should definitely seek the assistance of someone who actually knows how to formulate and get a recipe from them and stick with that. So someone like a board certified nutritionist who you can consult with online.
There are a number of foods around now that have got additives put in them, things like, I don't know, turmeric and glucosamine. Is there any benefit or advantage in having those in a diet?
So turmeric is one where I always remind people there's a difference between turmeric and curcumin. So turmeric is like the store-bought stuff. It doesn't really do anything. It's kind of really just a flavouring. It's not really going to provide any benefits. It's not bioavailable to dogs in that form. It has to actually be processed so you get the curcumin extract, which is the actual active ingredient in turmeric. And that is what you see that actually helps with a bit of joint pain and stuff like that. So it does help, but you have to make sure that you're using a veterinary supplement that's actually had it extracted properly. With glucosamine, I mean, the science is still a bit wonky on it, but, you know, it does provide some benefit to some dogs. But whether or not that's all dogs, there's really not enough studies to tell us at the moment if it's any major benefit anyway.
There's a move these days in human diets for some of these more specialized diets, vegan diets, vegetarian diets, gluten-free diets. And I noticed that they are starting to push a little bit into pet diets. Feeding these kind of diets to pets, should people be doing it? Are there risks and problems involved?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, we'll touch on vegan first. I live in an area, or I practice in an area that has quite a big vegan or vegetarian population. So I do get this question quite a lot, and I do get a lot of dogs that come through that are on vegan diets. Commercially available, but I always remind people that, you know, unless you're purchasing it from kind of a reputable company, you really don't know if it's going to meet their requirements. And particularly there was a recall recently on some vegan foods because of some issues that we encountered with that. So if people really, really do want to feed a vegan diet to their dog. I want to say dog, because cats really should never be on a vegan diet. It is extremely dangerous for them. They can be on a vegetarian diet, but again, it's really not something that they should be on, because they are obligate carnivores, obviously. So they do need some meat in their diet or some meat protein. With dogs, being that they're omnivores, they can obviously survive on a vegan diet. Again, it's not something we'd recommend, but if someone really, really wants to feed that, I do recommend they go with something that is that has been tried and tested. So my recommendation is usually prescription level vegetarian diets, which are the closest thing to safe, I guess, for a dog. Then with the gluten-free, I'm actually celiac myself, so this trend kind of really gets to me. But the biggest thing is dogs and cats don't have celiac disease, so there's really no benefit for them being gluten-free or grain-free. And particularly there is actually evidence against them, with them being a little bit dangerous. So I always recommend people, why are you wanting to feed this? And can we find an alternative that's probably safer? And 9 times out of 10, you can. So I usually explain to them there's no benefit. They're also not going to have celiac disease. It's very rare that they have a grain allergy. So let's look at something that could work better for your pet.
You just alluded to prescription diets there, Jess, which are a whole other class or group of foods for cats and dogs. What are they, and are there any issues in feeding a prescription diet to a healthy animal?
Yeah, so there's a few things there. Prescription diets exist to obviously benefit certain conditions, so disease states and that sort of thing. So particularly things like kidney disease or urinary disease, any sort of issue that can actually be either treated or moderated with diet. So these ones are slightly different to how we were talking about before with AFCO standards. So these diets generally don't even, they don't fall into the same category as needing to be complete and balanced in the AFCO sense. So they usually got different nutrient profiles to treat that disease. So I suppose kidney disease is a good one, where it's not going to have the same level of protein that a commercial diet would. And that's because protein is obviously processed by the kidneys. So you're reducing kidney workload. And there's a couple of other things in there that basically help remove toxins from the kidneys. So the reason you wouldn't feed it to a pet that doesn't have that problem is because, obviously, for example, cats, they have quite a high protein requirement given that they're carnivores. So if you feed a kidney diet to a cat that doesn't have it, it's probably not going to meet their requirements and they may actually have some deficiencies there. That being said, though, there are some prescription diets that do say that it is okay to feed as a maintenance diet to all pets anyway, because there's obviously nothing that's going to be in there that's going to harm them. It's just obviously some of the biochemistry in there is slightly different.
Another, I don't know, I suppose you could call it a trend in human nutrition these days, are probiotics. I've got a number of clients who will say, oh, I'm giving my cat or dog probiotics. Are probiotics doing anything for pets? And I suppose, can you use human probiotics in animals?
Yeah, so I did do a post on this recently. So probiotics, they can help. They are beneficial if you use a veterinary product. using a human product, obviously the biggest thing we have to remember with probiotics is that they have to be host specific. So they have to be specific to the animal that we're giving it to. And for that reason, obviously every human is and every dog or every cat is all going to have their own specific microbiome. So they're going to have their own bacteria that naturally lives in their gut. Between humans and cats and dogs, that's going to vary quite vastly. So obviously there's some crossover in some of the bacterial strains, but they're quite different between like even just dogs and humans. Even though we're omnivores, we still have quite different probiotics. Now, the other thing is that they're also absorbed slightly differently. So with human probiotics, they won't survive the passage of a dog's tract to actually provide any benefit. So they'll actually reach the stomach and then they'll just die. Whereas with humans, obviously our stomach acid is slightly different. Our environment is slightly different. So it's going to benefit us, but it's not going to benefit a dog who's literally just going to kill them, I suppose, once they ingest them. I tend to recommend probiotics in specific cases. So if a pet is having diarrhea or they've had some dietary upset, then a probiotic would be beneficial, at least for a few weeks, just to get the gut back to normal. But the best thing at the moment is actually prebiotics. So feeding a diet that's high in prebiotic fiber actually feeds your own gut bacteria to make your own probiotics, which is actually better than providing an artificial probiotic that may or may not actually work for you anyway.
And just to probably state the obvious here, yogurt is not a probiotic.
No. No, not at all.
When we go shopping for ourselves, a lot of the foods that we are purchasing have actually got an ingredients list on them, which, to be fair, I don't read very often, mainly because the writing's too small for me to see. A lot of pet foods also carry ingredients lists. How do people read ingredients lists? What information are they telling us? What should they be looking for? And I suppose the bottom line is should they even be bothering having a look at the ingredients list?
Yeah. I mean, you hit the nail on the head there, should you even bother looking at it. I honestly, a lot of the time I sort of sit there and go, there's honestly really nothing in here that's going to be relevant to you if you don't actually understand what a lot of these things mean. And you do get a lot of people who will come to me and be like, but it's got this thing in it, it's really bad. And I'm like, dude, that's just a vitamin. Like, so I think the biggest thing to take from an ingredient list is pretty much don't look at it unless there's something that you really need to check. So obviously if your pet has like a diagnosed allergy to chicken or beef, then check that there's no chicken or beef. But other than that, there's really nothing you can glean from an ingredient list. And a lot of the time, particularly some of these newer companies, they'll put on there like, oh, it's fresh chicken is the first ingredient. And you sort of go, yeah, but that's not actually any dietary benefit, because the first ingredient just means it's the heaviest ingredient before you've processed it. So fresh chicken is 70% water. So you're basically saying most of my diet's water. So there's no nutritional benefit from it. So the ingredient list is heavily manipulated to kind of, like you said, for people to glean some information from, but there's really no information you can glean from it other than, does it contain what I'm worried about? No, good.
I can live with that advice. It means I don't have to go and find my glasses every time I'm buying cat food. Jess, what do we give our pets as treats?
Yeah, so I always sort of go with, I suppose each pet is going to have a different need. And some pets, my first sort of go-to is always like, well, you may as well just feed something that's going to provide a benefit as a treat as well. So I usually recommend stuff like VOHC approved dental treats. They're fantastic. There's a huge range of them. You can go on the VOHC website and see the whole list of things that are approved. And I find they're usually quite tasty anyway. So pets will love them and they're going to get their teeth cleaned at the same time. The other thing is single ingredient treats. So the most common one that we have in clinic is dried beef liver or dried lamb liver, which is totally fine as long as you, obviously your pet doesn't have allergies to any particular animal that it's from. But they're really good as well because they're just one ingredient and they're basically just dried out, so there's nothing nasty in them. I always tell people to avoid some of those weird sort of supermarket ones, anything that's got milk in it. I see a lot of people come through with like milk-based treats or cheese-based treats and their dog's just got diarrhea because most of them are lactose intolerant. So I always say steer clear of those, steer clear of rawhide. Anything that's too hard for you to obviously scratch with your nail is probably going to break teeth. So yeah, just always looking at things that are like single ingredient or VOHC approved. That's what I tend to go for.
You just jogged my memory there. Should you be feeding milk to cats if most cats are lactose intolerant?
No. Pretty much no.
Look, I'm going to wrap it up here, Jess, but just a couple of things. If people have got nutritional problems with their pets, where do they go for advice? I mean, your world of Instagram is absolutely full of people who are giving advice on what you should and shouldn't feed your pets. And I read it and I just think this is just garbage. So where do you go for good quality nutritional advice for your pets?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, number one rule, run far, far away from the internet. I suppose you guys can check my blog, but that's, you know, again, there's places on the internet that you can go for reliable information. So as I said before, you can consult with a board certified veterinary nutritionist if you really want something that's going to be like a formulated diet for you, or you've got quite a complicated case. Even your vets can refer you. Of course, always ask your vet for advice and your vet team. They're always going to be able to give you the best advice available to them at the time. They're also going to give you evidence-based advice, not, you know, what Susan said on Facebook. And yeah, try not to like jump on Facebook before you come to the vet, because we're probably going to tell you to stop doing all of that because it's probably not correct. Online, you can also have a look at the Tufts University Pet Foodology blog. They're run by board certified nutritionists and they do have really, really good information there as well. And yeah, ask people like me, ask people who are certified and who actually know what they're talking about. Don't ask some random on Facebook.
No truer word has ever been said. Don't ask some random on Facebook. Jess, time for a plug for you now. If people want to get in contact with you or read more of your stuff online, where do they find you?
Yeah, so they can find me on Instagram or Twitter as NutritionRVN, or you can find me on my blog, NutritionRVN.com.
And as usual, I'll put links on our website, which is vetpodcast.weebly.com.
To find us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, just search at vetpodcast and like us while you are there. Subscribe to us on your usual podcast player, and if you enjoyed the podcast, please rate us on your player and share us with your friends. Our website is vetpodcast.weebly.com. Weebly is Weebly. Or email vetpodcast@gmail.com.